Welcome to Because I Want to Know, the podcast where I interview guests about their crazy unique occupations or life experiences. I'm your host, Leslie Fear. So let's get into it, shall we? Hey everyone, today I'm joined with Annie Weeble. She is a friend of mine. She's a paranormal investigator. She is also riddled with stories about spooky stuff. And girl, I'm so happy you're back with me. Welcome to the show.
Girl, it is officially spooky season. Can we say that now? Because we live for spooky season.
Right? I mean, it is so crazy how all of a sudden it's spooky season, because I was like, hey, come back and we'll do one. And I know that you recently moved into a house, and we need to talk about what was going on. I don't know if you still live there. I don't know anything about it. So let's talk about it.
Okay, so here's the way that this went down. So the last time that you and I talked, we kind of had like an anti-paranormal investigator chat, right?
Right.
So I've been a paranormal investigator for more than 15 years. Yeah. I am also sensitive to the paranormal realm, the spiritual realm, whatever you want to call it. It's been handed down through my mom's side of the family, specifically my paternal grandfather over the years.
Okay.
So I have always had experiences with spirits reaching out to me. It started in my teens when I had experiences with all four of my grandparents when they passed. Mm. And then when I started really doing paranormal investigating, I started experiencing spirit in a different way. They would come to me before we went on investigations, or I would experience things on the investigations. So I've had this mesh of wanting to prove things scientifically, but also having that spiritual background that came literally from the Appalachian granny witches that were my great-great-grandmother and her sisters.
Wow.
On my mom's side of the family.
Okay.
So this is something that I have experienced the majority of my life. I have actively done paranormal investigating for more than 15 years. The last time you and I talked, we had this chat about people using their energy to create their own hauntings,
yes,
right? Basically,
yes.
We became our own ghosts by this excess energy,
yes,
that we were exuding for whatever reason. So it wasn't actually a spiritual haunting. It was more like a psychokinetic. It was a PK haunting. But I told you in that conversation, I'm not totally abandoning the spiritual field, right?
Right.
I'm not saying that I don't believe that there are places that can hold on to that type of energy. Mm-hmm. What I didn't tell you at that time was that I was actively experiencing a haunting in a home that was close to me. Mm. And over the last year, this has played out to be one of the most prevalent hauntings backed by historical fact that I have ever researched. And you are officially the first person that I am telling this story to.
I'm so excited. Yeah. All right, so let me ask you this before we start. Is it going to be any trigger warnings, or is it just normal haunting of a house?
No, there's nothing that I would say would require a trigger warning. Okay. So I think we're good. Yeah, we're good.
Cool.
All right. So when I met my boyfriend, Ren, mm-hmm, he was living in an old historic house in our hometown.
Okay.
Now, he and I were both raised in this town. We've lived here for decades. I've literally driven by this house hundreds, if not a thousand times in my lifetime. Yeah. And never paid any attention to it until the day that he and I met.
It's on
the main drag in Huntington. We live in Southern West Virginia.
Okay.
And so the day that we met, we were meeting up to go to a concert, and I pull up on the street in front of this house, mm-hmm, and I look at it and I'm like, how did I never pay attention to this house before? It's absolutely beautiful and grand. It's this three-story colonial revival brick home that you can
beautiful.
Tell has just been there for more than a century.
Oh, wow.
So I pull up and I'm sitting on the street waiting for him to come out of the house, and I look down at my phone. Now, when I've experienced spirit in the past, the way that I would say I know a spirit comes into my space, mm-hmm, is much like how a physical person would come into your space.
Okay.
You know, if somebody comes into a room and the energy changes,
oh, yeah.
That's much how I feel spirit too.
Yeah.
So when spirit would come into a place, I would feel that energy change and take notice.
Okay.
I was sitting in my car in front of this house and I feel that energy change. And I look up expecting it to be him coming out of the house.
Yeah.
And there's a little boy standing in his yard. Now
what?
It's dark. Right.
What?
It's dark.
Oh my God.
It was unseasonably warm for that time of year.
Okay.
But the weather that night was really bad. We had this windstorm
that
blew through town. And by the end of the concert that we had attended that night, the majority of our town was without power. Everything had shut down. So we're like in the middle of this windstorm and there's this little boy standing in his yard. I can tell when I look at the boy that he's not a living person because of the way that he's dressed.
But I have to ask, girl, I'm the one that says, I want to hear what you have to say to me, mom, and all the things because I could talk to her. I don't want to see her. And you know, this is already a ghost or a spirit. Did you not freak out? How do you not freak out about that?
Because it's something I've experienced the majority of my life.
Okay.
And
that makes sense.
As a paranormal, yeah, as an investigator, I don't typically lead with the, you know, with my stories about being able to communicate with spirit.
Okay.
And there was a time in my life that I didn't have as much spirit interaction.
Okay.
A lot of it was about, you know, my own psyche.
Sure.
And like during the time that I was pregnant, I had no spirit interaction.
Wow.
During the time that I was pregnant, it was like, so it's something that I'm used to.
Like you had a shield or something when you were pregnant, like a blocker or whatever, right?
It was.
Yeah.
And I fully believe that that was blocked because my guides knew that I needed all the energy that I could muster to grow the tiny little human that was, you know, coming up inside of me.
Yeah.
So there's a long period of time that I really did not experience spirit a lot.
Okay.
So this is a time in my life that I'm really kind of stepping back into that realm again.
Okay.
And I pull up in front of this house and there's this little colonial boy standing in the yard, right?
Wow.
So he was probably 7 or 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He had like sandy brown hair. He was wearing what I would describe as, you remember the little sailor outfit?
Oh, yeah.
That we used to put kids in?
Yeah.
So he was wearing like one of the turn of the century sailor outfits with the white kind of blouse sea shirt underneath.
Okay.
Had the dark jacket over top of it that had the kind of wide arms,
mm-hmm.
the knee length breeches with the white tights underneath.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the outfit was dark and had the little string tie around the neck.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I thought,
okay.
Oh, yeah, well, you're not what I anticipated seeing here.
Right.
And this, you know, this transpires in a matter of 5 to 10 seconds. And my attention is drawn away when, you know, my boyfriend comes out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And when I turn to look for the little boy again, he's gone.
Oh, wow.
So I don't say anything to him, obviously. And some time passes.
Yeah.
Right. You don't want to immediately go into that with, hey, I see spirits.
Right.
So I let it simmer for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then the first time that I enter the house, this happens again. So
yeah.
A number of weeks later, I go into the house for the first time and it's absolutely stunning. Everything is as it was when this house was originally built.
Oh, wow.
The hardwood floors, the dark wooden pocket doors,
mm-hmm.
the stone fireplaces. And I'm like, I want to buy this house. I want to live here. This is where I'm meant to be, right?
Right.
And so I'm kind of walking through the house. He has two dogs that are following me.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I get that very instinctive sense of someone else is here with us again.
Yeah.
And when I turn to look at the stairs going up to the second floor, on the landing, there is a woman. So the way that I would describe this woman was probably in her mid-50s.
Okay.
She also looked very much turn of the century,
mm-hmm.
although I felt like her dress was a little more modern. So I would have classified it more like 1920s to 30s.
Okay, kind of a flapper kind of look or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
She had like salt and pepper hair that was pulled up in a bun.
Okay.
It was more dark than gray.
Okay.
Below average height. She was dressed in like a colonial type dress, very dark, you know, the long kind of puffy sleeves, the collar that came up with a little bit of lace around it. And she felt very intimidating.
Oh.
My first instinct was, this place was a school or an orphanage or something where she was used to guiding the things that happened here, right? Like, she wasn't taking any garbage from anybody, basically. And she stood there watching us for a number of seconds, and I turn, and when I turn again, she's gone. I'm like, okay, this house definitely was something, is something. I just can't put it all together yet.
Now, Annie, this house, I mean, if it was a school, it's a pretty good size house then, correct?
It's a huge house. Okay. It is. And for the time period that it was built, you knew that it had to belong to someone in that time period that was prominent. I just didn't know why or how at the time. None of it made sense until later. But yeah, this is a big house. This is a very big house.
Okay.
So a little bit of time passes, and I'm there late one evening, and I'm walking the hallway to go to the restroom, and I see the third energy there.
What?
When I tell you, when I tell you that this house was the most eclectic mixture of energies that I've ever interacted with, it's no lie.
Wow.
So I round the corner in the hallway to go to the restroom, and there is a gentleman standing there. I would say he was probably in his late 20s to early 30s. He had very dark hair that was slicked over to the side.
Okay.
He had a thick, dark mustache. Very attractive gentleman for that time period.
Yeah.
He was wearing a shirt that I don't even know how to describe it. It was like an off-white linen shirt that buttoned up. But you know how they had like the kind of cinched cuffs that you could unbutton and roll up?
Yes.
That was what he was wearing. So it made me feel like he was working. He was doing something with his hands. He had his sleeves rolled up and like he was into something.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, well, also didn't anticipate you. But by this time, nothing in this house is surprising me. Right.
Nothing is surprising you. Oh my.
And the longer that I'm here, the more surprised that I am.
Yeah.
So this goes on another several weeks. I'm there very late in the evening and I fall asleep in one of the bedrooms. And when I wake up, the little boy that I had seen in the front yard was standing in the closet.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So for whatever reason, this bedroom did not have doors on the closet. All the other bedrooms had doors on the closets, but this one didn't.
Okay.
And he was standing in the closet.
Oh.
He didn't frighten me. He just made me sad. I had this overwhelming sense of, I don't know where you belong, but I want to help you find it, basically.
Yeah.
It was just this forlorn, sad, like as a mother, it made you heartsick sort of thing. Like, where do you belong? I get chills still when I talk about it. I'm covered in chills right now.
Yeah.
And just over a period of seconds, he just vanished, just kind of like mystified and was gone.
Now, Annie, is he like interacting with you in the way of like looking at you, acknowledging you, or does it feel more residual to you?
It felt residual.
Okay.
He did not speak. It was not like it was any type of an interaction of like, oh my gosh, this is why I'm here.
Yeah.
It was just like I was in his space and there he was. I was invading his space, basically.
Okay. Yeah, you were in your dimension. He was in his, doing his own thing. And you interacted without, well, you said he was residual. So he
didn't know you were there probably, right?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know if he did or not. And as the story kind of progresses, I have a feeling that maybe he did.
Okay.
But not in the same way that the rest of the energies did.
Okay.
Yeah. It kind of gives me hope that maybe he didn't really realize that I was there, if that makes sense.
Sure. No, it does.
Yeah. So this has all gone on in the span of a few months.
Okay.
And I'm kind of slowly telling Ren, like, hey, I think your house is haunted.
Yeah.
He knows what I do. He knows the lifestyle that I live. Yeah. He knew that I interacted with spirits. And so even though he's very, he's a skeptic, 1,000%.
Yeah, he's like my husband.
He's like, right. He didn't look at me and was like, you know, you're crazy and you need to get out of here.
Right.
He listened with open ears and an open heart, just ready to accept it. Mm. And so I told him.
Okay.
Then the dreams started happening.
Ooh, okay.
So flash forward another several months, mm-hmm. and I'm asleep in the house, and I have an incredibly vivid dream. And at the beginning of this dream, Ren and I are standing outside of the house, and there is a man there with us. I don't know who this man is. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like he's taking us on a tour of this house, which is bizarre.
Okay.
And so he walks us up to the second floor, and we get ready to go up into the attic. I had never been in the attic of this house. I did not know where it was. Mm. I did not know where it looked like, had never been up there. In my dream, I walk up the attic stairs, and over to the right, there is a separate room by itself.
Okay.
In this room, there are two coffins, and in the coffins, and the coffin that's sitting on the right side of the room, there is the mummified body of a man.
Ooh.
And the only way that I can tell that it's a man is because he was dressed in like a turn of the century suit.
Okay.
In the coffin on the left side of the room, there's a man and a woman.
They're both in the coffin?
They're both in the coffin. And these bodies are not skeletons. They're like mummified.
What?
So I can see their faces. They look mummified with that sunken, like, embalmed look.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. They're both wearing, I would guess, like, somewhere between 1920s to 40s clothes.
Okay.
The woman was wearing this dress that was very modest. It was, like, a mauve pink with flowers on it and the little, like, lace doily collar. She had her hair up in a bun.
Okay.
I'm standing in this room looking at these coffins, and Ren walks around me and climbs into the coffin with the man and the woman.
Oh my, what?
Right. So this man who is like giving us the tour of the house is still there. And I'm like, why are you in this coffin? You have to get out of this coffin.
Yeah.
And I turn and I look at the man who's giving us this tour, and I said, there's something in the floor here. And I bend down and I pull up a floorboard, and there's a box underneath there.
Mm.
And when it's like a wooden box. Mm. And when I take the box out, this box is full of old coins.
Okay.
And I look at the man who's giving us this tour, and I said, there's more of this in the walls.
Oh, wow.
And I woke up.
Okay. Tell me you went straight to there. When you woke up.
I did not.
Oh.
I did not.
Okay.
I didn't. Okay. So I told Ren in the days after that about the dream. Now, remember, he's very skeptical.
Oh, yeah.
He said, I've been having some weird dreams too.
Ooh.
And I'm like, you've got to tell me.
Yeah.
So he commences to tell me that he, on a number of occasions, has had dreams of killing someone. Now, this is not a, like, this is so out of character.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I was like,
what? Yeah.
Like,
what is going on?
I'm so stunned at this point. I don't even know what to say.
Yeah.
And I was like, you have to tell me what this was about. So the first dream that he had was actually of someone he knew, mm-hmm. of a family member who had been abusive to another family member. And he dreamt that he killed that person.
Oh, wow.
The second dream, though, he did not know who these people were, and he dreamt that he was in a church,
mm.
and that he had killed a man and was trying to hide the body in the steeple of this old church.
What?
And that it's so out of character. It was so wild.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he's telling me that as he is trying to hide the body of this person in the steeple, the blood is dripping through the floorboards.
Oh, my God.
And there's somebody below them who sees it and starts to come up there. And he said, I had to kill him too. And that's when I woke up.
What? That would scare the crap out of me if I was him.
And until I told him about the dream, about the coffins, he never would have put the two together. And I'm like, you know that I believe in dreams. Yeah. I feel like there's something in this house that is affecting both of us when we are here. I have seen it. I have dreamt it. You have dreamt it. We have to find out what's in this house.
Yeah.
So this house belongs to Wren's friend. He bought it with the intentions of renovating the attic space into an apartment and renting out the rest of it, basically. And life happened. He got sidetracked. He moved out of the house. And after that, a number of his friends had moved in and stayed. And that's kind of how Wren came to be there.
Okay.
So we have a friendly get together and I sit his friend down and I'm like, what happened in this house? Mm. What am I not understanding?
Yeah.
And he said, I don't really know. When I bought it, they were using it as different. A lot of the old houses here, they changed into like office settings because they were so big.
Yeah.
And so it would be like, there's a number of accounting firms and realtors around here that will buy these big old houses, turn the bedrooms into office spaces. And that's basically what was happening in this house when he bought it.
Okay.
And he said, but the strange thing was when I bought it and when I went up into the attic to start to renovate, there were all these old pictures and documents and all this stuff up there from like, I don't even know when. And I was like, well, what did you do with it?
Yeah.
He said, I had a dumpster in the backyard and I opened the window and I threw it out.
No, he did not.
I could have open hand slapped him if I believed in violence.
God, what is it? But they, you know, if you're skeptical at all, you're not thinking, you know, this might help me understand what's going on or whatever. And if they're not getting any, like you're sensitive, you could see them. Like my husband's so skeptical too. And I don't know if he would see even what I would see, and I'm not so sure I'd see what you see. So it's one of those things where you have to kind of be open to it. And oh no. So please tell me you were able to research the house in another way.
So my romantic historian heart died right there. And I'm like, this is a travesty.
Yeah.
So he did tell me, he was like, but you know, that explains an incident that happened up there with one of our other friends. And so he launches into the story telling me that they have, you know, in the past couple of years, they had a friend who was staying with them.
Yeah.
And they had all been out, you know, kind of to a party one evening. Mm-hmm. This friend had gone up to the attic to go to sleep.
Yeah.
He had a bed up there at that point. And he left in the middle of the night.
Oh, wow.
And when they asked him what happened, why he left in the middle of the night, he would never tell them and has not been back to the house since.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I bet I could tell you why he left because I think I've seen it.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So this progresses in another few months, flash forward. And at this point, Wren is talking about moving out of the house.
Okay.
I immediately got anxiety about him moving out of the house and the house being empty.
Oh, wow.
I almost felt like I had to be there. It was like a sense of ownership. I would go in, I would speak to the spirits that were there. This sounds crazy as you say it out loud. But, you know, I would speak out loud to them.
Yeah.
I was so used to seeing things in that house that thinking about leaving and the house being abandoned made me sad.
Oh,
it gave
sure.
me the sense of anxiety.
Yeah.
So we were there one evening packing up some of his things, putting them into boxes. And I laid down and I fell asleep. And in the middle of the night, woke up to find the woman who I had seen on the stairs standing over top of me. She was just kind of watching me sleep. She looked exactly like she did when I saw her on the stairs until... She took both of her hands and she reached up to her throat. You know how you make choking symbol?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like you put both of your hands over your throat.
Mm-hmm.
She reached up with both of her hands, covered her throat, and began to vomit and cough and spurt blood.
What?
In the most aggressive manner that any spirit has ever shown me anything.
Oh my gosh.
This was like bright red blood that was, as she is choking and vomiting, is like running over her hands and down to her chest.
Oh, God.
And I sit up in bed, and when I sit up, she's gone immediately. I told Ren the next morning, I was like, we have to find out who's in this house.
Yeah.
Because you can't leave out of here and leave this behind. I mentally cannot do this, right?
I mean, you're a paranormal investigator. I have to find it out. I have to know what's going on.
I had to find out. I had to get to the bottom of it. So I messaged a friend of mine. Her name is Teresa. Mm-hmm. She's a local paranormal investigator and a fantastic historian.
Okay.
She does a blog. I think it's called Teresa's Haunted History.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She is phenomenal, and especially with Appalachian culture.
Okay.
I did a little bit of research on my own online, and I couldn't find anything of value. And this was like last-ditch effort. And I messaged her and I said, I don't know if you remember any orphanages, children's homes, boarding schools, anything that existed in our downtown area, but we have a house that is very haunted and we're trying to get to the bottom of it. She messages me back immediately. This is the way the universe works. And she's like,
yeah.
I'm actually at the county library right now doing some research for some other stories. Send me the address.
Yeah.
Right. Send me the address and I will pull the deed and the prop. I was like, within 15 minutes,
she had
every answer that I had been looking for almost a year.
Do tell, man. I'm dying now.
Okay. So I'm going to leave the last name out of it just for anonymity, because I really don't know if any of this family still even exists around here.
Okay.
But what she found was that the house had been built in 1914 by a man named Hannibal.
Oh, wow.
Some of the literature called him Hannibal. Some called him H.H. Some called him Ham. He went by different names.
Okay.
Hannibal built this house for his wife, Bertie, and their kids.
Okay.
It was built in 1914. Hannibal was killed in 1917 in a car accident.
Oh.
Yeah. So the only other thing that we found about him was that his occupation was listed as a salesman.
Okay.
So they must have been a pretty prevalent family at that point.
Sure.
To have, you know, you don't hear about a lot of people dying in car accidents in 1917.
Yeah, but they're Model T for sure, you know.
Right, right. So he was one of the original car accidents, apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can imagine, they've just built this massive grand home.
Yeah.
Bertie is there. She is young. She's widowed. She has little kids. What does she do?
Yeah.
She rents her rooms out as a boarding house.
Oh.
So this home had been a boarding house.
Mm.
Now, in downtown Huntington, in this area, in the early 1900s, the railroad industry was huge, was booming. They were building the C&O railroad through here.
Okay.
So they had thousands upon thousands of migrant workers moving through here. Okay. So it would have been perfect at that point.
Yeah.
But it also meant that there were probably thousands of people that moved through that home at any given point.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're capturing a lot of that different energy. The one person that came through consistently on census records that Teresa was able to find as someone who was boarding in that house was a man named Clyde. Clyde was the first embalmer at the first funeral home in Huntington.
What?
That you can see
from
the back door of this house.
Oh my gosh.
It was across an alley. It's still across an alley. This funeral home is still there. He was the first embalmer. And he shows up in a number of different census records. So he was there for a long time. Now, think about that dream that I had in the attic of the mummified bodies.
Right?
Were we experiencing something that Clyde had seen at work?
Yeah.
That he could have potentially even brought back into that house with him.
Right.
I mean, there were no regulations about embalming bodies at that point because he was one of the, you know, the first in this area, definitely.
Sure.
And he was there for a number of years.
Well, and the thing is, if it's that close, why wouldn't it maybe contaminate it in the way of it can come over to this house? It can still be haunting over in the funeral home as well. I mean, you know, you've heard of those stories too, where they, wherever the spirit goes, their memories go with them. Maybe it's kind of that too.
Absolutely. Who's to say that it couldn't have hitched a ride home with him,
right?
So that was the first startling revelation of this guy was an embalmer, and I'm having dreams of mummified bodies in the attic of this house. So that was the first revelation.
Yeah.
So then I find out that Birdie had passed away in the house in 1929. She was 58 years old. Mm. She died from gallbladder cancer in December of 1929.
Wow.
So think about the vision that I had of her standing over top of me, vomiting and coughing blood violently. I believe that's what she showed me. I believe that those were probably some of the last memories that she had being there in that house, being so sick.
Yes.
And that would have absolutely have been a side effect of gallbladder cancer. You would have vomited blood.
Wow. That is crazy. You know, because it's true. The house carries that energy of whomever lived there, regardless if it was a good memory, a bad memory, it carries all of those vibrations, all that frequency of energy. So I get why you saw and felt the way you did. Because that's, oh my, I don't, what did y'all move out? What happened?
I know, I'm like, in shock.
So he did eventually move out.
Okay.
And the day that he moved out, I went into the attic for the first time.
Ooh.
We were packing things up and I said, I don't even know how to get up in there, but I need to go into the attic before we leave this house. And I reminded him of the dream, and he was like, he said, you know, it's odd because they always kept it locked and I don't really know why.
Oh,
and so,
great.
Yeah.
Oh, no. He,
right. So he goes downstairs, he comes back with this key, and we go up into the attic, and you go right up the attic stairs and off to the right is the room that I dreamt of.
Really?
Now, at this point, everything is empty, with the exception of the stuff that his friend had moved up there. He kind of abandoned his renovation job, but the room at the top right of the stairs was right there. And I literally looked at him and I was like, I got to dig up the floorboards. I didn't.
Oh, my God. So why did he want to move? I mean, if it was such a great house, what was he kind of creeped out? Did he not want something so big? Did he not want the big renovation project? What made him go, since he was kind of skeptical in the beginning?
It was just huge. And, you know, it's hard to cool in the summertime. It's hard to heat in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And it's just so enormous that I could see why Birdie had to have so many people living there at the same time just to make it function.
Yeah,
like, you
sense.
Have to have multiple people there because it's just so huge.
Wow.
And so his decision at that point was, I'm just going to sell the house because I can't do anything with it at this point.
Right.
He still hasn't sold it, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah, but I happen to know you are going to get a team together, right? And do a paranormal investigation. Okay, I'm sorry. I may have spoiled that for you.
No, not at all. So we are, but there were a couple of other things that happened after that. The synchronicities that made it impossible to be like, you can just leave this story behind, because it could have ended there, right?
Sure.
But it didn't. It has continued.
Oh, wow.
So once I found out the history behind Birdie and her family, I found out where they were buried.
Oh.
And it's literally 5 minutes from my house.
Wow.
It's in one of the big city cemeteries. And so I sent a message to the office at the cemetery, and I was like, hey, I'm looking for the specific grave.
Yeah.
And if you could point me in the right direction, I would appreciate it. And within the hour, the lady from the office sent me a message back, and she was like, yeah, absolutely. This is where it is. It's plot number, da, 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 da. And she sent me a map.
Okay.
So I take off on my lunch break. I'm headed up there.
Oh.
And I drive around for probably half an hour and I can't find it. And I'm like, I'm in the wrong part of this cemetery here. I'm looking at this map. I'm turning it upside down and sideways.
Yeah.
And so I'm about to give up and something says to me, go back this direction. And it was a road that I had just come down through. And so I literally turned around, went back up the same direction that I had just come from. And right there she was.
Wow. Okay.
So I park my car and I get out and Birdie and Hannibal are buried together there. I started to cry.
They're buried together. See, you saw them together in the attic, though. Think about that.
Right. So and it very well could have been them in the attic. And actually, I never thought about that until you said that. It very well could have been. Right? And so I get out and I'm like paying my respects to these people who died a century ago that I've never physically seen. Here's the strange freaking part, Leslie. Uh-oh. So I told you about, you know, my maternal grandfather, who is the one that I feel like endowed me with the gifts that I have, right? Yes. This is our family.
Sure.
Came from there. My grandfather's name was Edgel.
Okay.
Weird name, right? Like, yeah. It is not passed down in our family. I've never been able to find it anywhere else. I have never, ever seen that name anywhere else.
Okay.
Until that day.
What?
I turn my back to Birdie's grave, and right behind her is my grandfather's name on a headstone. The name Edgel. I'm covered in chills. I took pictures of all of it. I'm going to send it to you.
Oh my God.
I sat down between those two graves and cried. Yeah. Like I knew who these people were. Never, never before and never since have I ever seen my grandfather's name printed on anything. And he's sitting right there beside Birdie. I mean, the name, not him physically.
Yeah. It kind of came full circle with you seeing that because in my mind, it's like, yeah, this is what you were supposed to see. We wanted to show you our life or whatever. Maybe it gave them closure. Maybe it just was just to let you know, listen, you have abilities and you can see this. And we wanted to get our story out. And hey, you're on a podcast now talking all about it. So you know what I mean? Right.
My grandfather died in 2013. And he has consistently over the years sent me signs and symbols. And anytime I talk to him and I need something from him, I find dimes everywhere, coins, just dimes, dimes specifically.
Yeah.
It was weird because I had gone to work that morning, and when I got there, there was a singular dime laying on my desk that had not been there the day before.
What?
And for whatever reason, I picked it up and I put it in my pocket. And that day when I left Birdie's grave, I left that dime on her grave.
Oh, what a lovely gesture, girl.
It was just kind of like connecting the two of them together. Like, I see you. Like, I feel you.
Yes.
And for whatever reason, my grandfather feels you. Oddly enough, the year that she died was also the year that my grandfather was born. I don't know. That you start to find all these little similarities.
It's just synchronicities. There was one. Yeah.
Yes. There was one other bizarre synchronicity that I found a little bit later. So doing a little more research about the house, mm-hmm. I discovered that it had been constructed by a pretty well-known architect in this area.
Okay.
The area specifically where that house was home to a lot of Italian immigrants.
Okay.
And there was a renowned architect. His name was Sidney Day. He actually there are some of his original blueprints hanging in our local museum.
Mm.
Sidney Day built Hannibal and Birdie's house.
What?
But he also built a handful, right. He built a handful of other houses that were in that area. And about a block from this house, there is another huge colonial revival house that Sidney Day built. That is currently on the National Historic Registry. It's called the Johnston Meeks House.
Mm.
Guess what that house has been since 2017?
What?
It has been the home of the Children's Home Society of West Virginia, the foster care system.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
The original thoughts that I had about boarding house, yes, orphanage, didn't exactly fall into place there, but just a block from there in a home that the same architect built.
You were picking up on all of that. You were picking up on all of that. Every single bit of that, you were picking up on that. So regardless if it's the house or around the house, just like the guy that embalmed, he was just right across the street. So it all had to do with that central location. And then you picked up on everything around it, you know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It all came full circle, but it took a year for it to happen. So you asked about doing an investigation.
Yes.
I hesitated for a while because we thought that our friend was going to sell the house. He had some different plans for it.
Yeah.
I just talked to him a couple of days ago and I was like, I've got to get back in this house before you decide what you're going to do with it. And he was like, you know the key code, just go over there.
Yeah.
So Friday the 13th, next Friday, I am taking a small group of people over there to do our first paranormal investigation.
Oh my yes. gosh. Oh my
There's goodness. A part of me that's very anxious about it, though, because this home has spoken to me in such a way that taking other people in there gives me a little bit of anxiety. I almost like an ownership over it, yeah, which is weird.
Well, I also think because it knows you, the house knows you, the people inside of it, you know, the spirits or whatever, whether they're there or they're visiting, you will be the conduit. And maybe you can say, these are my friends. We just want your story. You know how you do. And you're very sweet. It's like going to someone's house. You're always very lovely and nice because this is where they lived. And you want to be respectful like anybody else would be when you walk into anyone's house. So I think if you're there, it will only go better. And if you explain it, it'll only go better. So I don't foresee anything bad happening in the way of not getting anything. I think maybe they'll start talking to you. I hope they do.
I mean, the house has been empty for almost a year.
Okay.
And as active as the energies were there, I feel like they're going to jump at the chance to talk.
I agree. I really do. Oh, my. What we're going to have to do is we're going to have another episode where you tell me everything that happens.
We're going to have to revisit. Yeah.
Yes.
So our plan right now is to go in on Friday evening. And we've done this with other residential cases. Residential cases, over the years as an investigator, are some of the ones that bring me the most joy because they have the most heart behind them.
Sure.
These are people inviting you into their sacred space, into their home,
yeah,
to experience something or explain something that they can't explain away themselves.
Right.
So a lot of times with the residential investigations, we'll make it maybe a 2-day thing. We'll go in, yeah, on one day and do what I call an opening, basically introduce ourselves.
Yeah,
like if you,
yeah,
like you said, like you're going into somebody's house,
yeah,
and then leave our equipment running through the night,
yes,
and then go back the next day and kind of pick up where we left off and see where
Absolutely.
We get.
Yeah, no, that's the best way to do it. And I tell you, I think you're going to have good results. I really do, because they know you. They know Ren. And now, did Ren sell it to his friend? See, I mean, I'm confused on who actually owned the house.
No, his friend owns the house.
Okay.
He was just basically renting, like kind of like Birdie did.
Oh,
they had
yeah.
this
okay.
they had friends who would, you know, kind of move in and out yes. of the house as
okay.
they were in different phases of their lives. And that's kind of what he was doing in that sense too.
Right.
And so maybe that's why she felt compelled to speak to us, because she saw his friend group do the same thing.
Absolutely.
Kind of like when she was using it as a boarding house.
And see, that makes even more sense to me, too, now that I know that, because, you know, I'm holding the mic because, guys, we've had some audio issues and now my mic, I think, is about to go out. So I've been also trying to make sure that we keep our audio. And so I think I missed a couple of things on who owned the house.
It's okay. It's all good. It's all good.
Right?
We'll revisit later, because I'm like you. I do feel like after this investigation, we'll have more to talk about. So yeah,
yes.
that's my ongoing haunted house story.
I love it. And also, guys, if you want to visit Annie on any social media, I know she has a Facebook and an Instagram page, and I'll let her tell you all of that.
It is all at Annie_Weebs. That's WEEBS. Facebook, Instagram. If anybody has any questions, paranormal questions, or just want to reach out to me, feel free to shoot me a message on Facebook or Instagram. Yeah, I'm always available and I love to hear from everybody.
Yeah, so. You do. You're amazing. And guys, yeah, send her a message. And Annie, you're such a sweet friend of mine and I adore you. Thank you again for being on my podcast and putting up with the technical difficulties we've had today.
Always, darling. I will love you through the mic problems no matter what, I promise.
Well, I love providing because I want to know at no cost. So if you like what you heard, please leave me a 5-star review or you can just buy me a cup of coffee. It's kind of like a Patreon, but you don't have a monthly subscription and you can give whatever you feel led to give. I am a one-woman show and I do all of my scheduling and my interviewing and my editing. So just know your support is so greatly appreciated. And one more thing, I am a paranormal romance novelist and you can find all of my books on Amazon. Just look up my name. I'm very easy to find. Thank you guys again and I will see you next week.